It's time for Normal Show Live's Cannabis Science with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York in Albany. Now, open wide and say, here's your dose of cannabis science.
We're visiting with Professor Mitch Earlywine from the State University of New York at Albany. Professor, welcome to the show.
Glad to be back.
I like saying professor.
Oh, I like hearing it.
Yeah, Dr. Earlywine just got promoted up from associate professor, was it?
Exactly.
All right, to full professor, and we're so happy about that because it just shows that you can be, you know, upfront about, you know, your feelings about this stupid war on marijuana and still make it somewhere in this world, as if Michael Phelps, Barack Obama, and Bill Clinton hadn't already proved that. To start off our show today, Dr. Earlywine, I was just wondering if you had any specific studies you wanted to cover before we jump right into people's questions.
Well, we had a nice email from a listener that asked about the vaporizer and certain aspects of aluminum that might get into the vapor. And I've discovered a study showing that that is not a concern. Another query has to do with ammonia coming out of the vaporizer in street cannabis, and I'm looking into that. It looks like that may be more an issue with knowing your grower than anything else. So street cannabis, but not the Nida cannabis, is producing some ammonia in the vaporizer, and I'm apprehensive about where these folks got their street cannabis, and maybe they came across somebody who was a little heavy on the fertilizer, and that may have been the problem.
Okay. And this concern with vaporizers and aluminum, with this was just the idea that it might get so hot the aluminum would release some sort of toxic chemicals or something?
I can understand that concern, and that's, I think, why the study was done in the first place. But aluminum's pretty resilient as far as that kind of thing is concerned, and it's not showing up in any measurable level in the vapors. Again, as long as folks aren't cranking the heat up too bad. This was done with Volcano, but I think other vaporizers either don't have aluminum or also wouldn't create any, as long as you're making sure you're not actually seeing smoke come out of the tube.
I see. All right. And some people out there who are watching us for the first time might be a little new to the idea. Can you just briefly explain vaporization and why it's more efficient than smoking or better for us than smoking?
I'd be delighted. The vaporizer is a gizmo that essentially runs hot air past your cannabis so that it releases cannabinoids in a fine mist but doesn't actually ignite the plant, and that way none of the nasty respiratory irritants end up in this vapor. And in fact, my student Nicholas Van Dam just emailed me the data, the clinical trial we've done. We've had 22 people go through, and a month later, after switching to the vaporizer, anybody who had some respiratory symptoms showed some pretty dramatic improvement on things like coughing and wheezing, and they also improved the amount of air they can hold in their lungs and how fast they can blow it out. So I'm really excited about the vaporizer, and I hope folks will consider turning to it.
Well, a couple of questions are coming in now with regard to vaporizers. Apparently, some folks know quite a bit about them, and there's a lot of discussion here as to what is the best temperature, Fahrenheit or Celsius, I guess, here, that one should vaporize their herb.
It's hard to know across different settings, but generally in that 120 to 170 degree range is going to be fine. It's sometimes better to just monitor what does it look like in the bag or in your tube. And if you can actually see smoke, that's clearly too hot. If you can't see anything at all, that doesn't mean it's too cool. Go ahead and inhale from it and see if you see sort of a light blue mist coming out in your exhalation. If that's what you've got, then that's going to work just fine. And believe me, cranking it up higher is no guarantee that it's actually better.
All right. A lot of stuff coming in here about the vaporization. A Corink is asking, or A Corink, I guess, is asking, why is the effect different from using a vaporizer than from smoking? Is the high any different?
I've had at least four people tell me that the high seems different to them, and that often it takes longer to have its impact than it does when they're smoking. I don't have a great pharmacological explanation for that, and I'm looking into it. It seems that perhaps ignited cannabis is something that folks tend to force down their lungs more rapidly, and we're accustomed to holding it down long. That may have something to do with it, but unfortunately we don't have definitive evidence just yet. Again, I just recommend if you can be just a little more patient, most folks are quite impressed with it.
Okay. Let me go back to the top of the list of questions here. We'll come back to some of the vaporization questions in a moment. We're speaking with Dr. Mitch Earlywine, who's a professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and the author of Pot and Parenting, among other great books on marijuana science. There's a question here from AR who wanted to ask you about the 2003 U.S. patent number 663507. This is the patent for the medical use of cannabinoids, I believe. Is that the kind of ammunition we should use in our anti-prohibition agenda, and does it further support us removing cannabis from Schedule 1?
I think so. Here we actually have documented evidence that the government has approved the idea that a cannabinoid has medical utility. If you get through the details on that patents law and the patent application, it doesn't say that there's a specific mode of administration that is approved and others that are explicitly not approved. So here's a wonderful document for, again, supporting the argument that medical cannabis is for real. I would add, too, that some other work that's been coming out lately showing that THC by itself without cannabidiol is particularly troublesome for some folks and seems to create some of the magical ideation and disorientation that is so problematic when we see folks use Marinol. And here's yet another argument that whole plant is clearly better than any of the synthesized things we've made so far. What a stunner. Mother Nature made a better thing than we did.
Yeah, certainly. Let's go to another question here from Dustin. Dustin is asking, does THC actually kill cancer cells or just repair damaged cells?
It turns out at least one study suggests both THC and a number of endogenous cannabinoids, things that are in your body already that work in the cannabinoid system, do shrink tumor cells, at least in animals and petri dish type studies. We haven't seen it used in humans yet, but you can imagine why.
Yeah. Yeah, tough to get those studies approved whenever you're trying to find some medical or good utility from marijuana, but plenty of money if you want to find something bad. Is that what you found?
I'm afraid so.
Yeah. All right. We're taking your questions here in our chat room at live.normal.org for Dr. Mitch Earlywine, a professor of psychology at the State University of New York in Albany. And let's go to this next question here from Paparatus Beats. Okay. Got the long names here in the chat room. Does vaporization make the tar levels in your lungs go away? Does it help to recover from smoking?
As it turns out, it's not the vaporization itself that does it, but the taking a break from smoking. So we're finding in the folks who switch to the vaporizer in our lab, they do report a little hacking and wheezing the first couple of days when they're on the vaporizer and not using smoked cannabis anymore, because that's actually their lungs are recovering, and the cilia on the little cells inside your lungs that are throwing things off are now back in action more than ever before, and they can really toss off any of the gunk that has been holding them down for a while. I want to emphasize that smoking cigarettes, of course, paralyzes these cilia because nicotine freaks them out, essentially. So if you're smoking cigarettes, your vaporizer work will be markedly less efficient. And, you know, we've discussed if you want to quit tobacco and want to email me about it, I'm happy to help you.
Well, speaking of tobacco and marijuana, you know, a lot of people, it's become popular to smoke blunts, you know, the cigar type marijuana, you know, where we're rolling tobacco with cannabis or rolling it in a tobacco leaf. Tell our listeners a little bit about the effects of being both a pot smoker and a tobacco smoker.
The problem, unfortunately, is that there's this sad interactive effect where cannabis alone seems to cause relatively few respiratory complications and no lung cancer. Tobacco alone, of course, we know makes for a really horrid lung cancer, but the combination leads to markedly more respiratory problems and risk for lung cancer if depending on whose data you're looking at. The bottom line is nicotine is really hard on the lungs, and the inhalation of smoke is really hard on the lungs, and there just seem to be a bad case for emphysema and for respiratory symptoms when you're using both of these at the same time. The thing with blunts is it seems certain because you're really wrapping the cannabis with what seems like only a leaf or two of tobacco, but Dunlap and some other folks down in New York City have shown you do seem to get worse respiratory symptoms smoking blunts than alternative forms of administration. And this habit of blunt chasing, where folks will smoke a blunt and then smoke a cigar right afterwards, seems to be more universal than I realized. Mm. And that, of course, is really setting you up for a lot of nicotine-related respiratory problems.
So the cigarette smoker who also smokes pot is worse off than just smoking cigarettes by themselves?
Only for the emphysema and respiratory symptom data, not for the lung cancer data. In fact, it's controversial, but Kashkin presented some data at a conference that suggested that the cannabis was actually having a mild protective effect against cigarette-induced lung cancer. And as you can imagine, that's the kind of thing that's going to get him nailed to the cross on the cover of People magazine. So he didn't come right out with that so much. But our beloved Don Abrams, of course, called him on it. And, in fact, his data are consistent with that idea. But, again, I'm not saying that it's not that smoking cannabis is some kind of lung cancer prevention strategy for cannabis users.
Okay. Speaking of cannabis and cancer, a lot of people in the chat room now are asking about Rick Simpson. He's the Canadian man who is claiming to be able to cure cancer through Phoenix Tears, which is his preparation of a hemp sort of oil. What is your take on that issue, the Rick Simpson cure?
I don't know Rick Simpson personally, and I haven't actually examined the oil. Some of the claims are way beyond where the science is right now. So we do have some evidence that cannabinoids can decrease the rate at which tumors form. But this notion that this oil is a cure for cancer is just not empirically validated yet in the standard randomized clinical trial kind of way. So it's not that he's had large groups of folks who got placebo and large groups of folks who got the oil and everybody in the oil got all better. It doesn't look like it's a potentially harmful habit, although I'm not sure you necessarily need to have his absolute brand, but it's clearly not the panacea when it comes to cancer. I'm open to the experimentation. I sure hope somebody can fund it.
All right. Moving on to another subject here. Rage Is Not Bad asks, I've heard that long-term use of cannabis leads to depression. Is this true?
Long-term use of cannabis and depression?
Yeah, does long-term use of cannabis lead to depression?
So Tom Denson and I published a paper showing that it doesn't seem to be that way. Recent data show that it's also not the case in that large study of Swedish conscripts, so those 50,000 guys who joined the army in Scandinavia and got followed up years and years later, so they've been followed up for 33 years now. And they're really modest, statistically significant links, but not big, meaningful ones with depression and anxiety. And I feel like, in a sense, it's just capitalizing on the fact that the sample is so big. And then there may be a subset of folks who are already depressed, who turn to cannabis, and then end up sort of exaggerating the look of cannabis's link to depression. But Rick Musty showed that, in fact, plenty of non-cannabis-using folks have comparable rates of depression. In teens, there was some concern about suicidal ideation and early cannabis use. Again, I think they may have a chicken and egg problem, but obviously we don't advocate use of marijuana for folks who are underage.
Right. And that chicken and egg problem always comes up. Do depressed people seek out cannabis, or does cannabis make people depressed? And I tend to think it's more of the former, you know, people that are, living without health insurance and not much access to mental health treatment try to do what they can do to deal with their depression. I'd love to see more research on that.
Well, and again, Tom Denson's study that he and I did together, I feel like it's just not the source. And, in fact, we have wonderful treatments for depression and some great self-help books. And anybody who's interested, just contact your local mental health crew, or feel free to check out my homies at the Association for Behavioral and Cognitive Therapies.
I think you may be the first professor to have uttered homies on the air. Thank you for that. We got time for a couple more questions here with Dr. Mitch Earlywine for our Cannabis Science. If you don't have time to get your question in here on the air, you can always email Dr. Mitch at 420research @gmail.com. This song comes in from Ren Likes Bass. Hey, Ren, I like bass too. The question is, what effects does marijuana have on the nervous system?
The clincher is marijuana's impact on its own special receptor, the cannabinoid receptor. And we've got natural cannabinoids in our body that fire these markedly more rapidly and more with a lot more force. But the ones that come from the cannabis plant are, what a surprise, more mellow and not as dramatic. And then the impact is all the short-term impacts everyone seems to know pretty well, improved mood, mild decreases in the ability to form new memories, and a general increase in hunger. And chronic effects depend upon, of course, a whole bunch of other health habits, but what we see are generally not a whole lot on the nervous system. Some strange heavy users who are put in MRIs when they do certain tasks have to use different parts of their brains in order to do as well as non-users on certain impulsivity type tasks where you have to inhibit a response. And some folks, what a surprise, the parts of your brain that are involved in how you sense time is passing seems to behave a little more sluggishly after literally 5,000 doses. And then some work down in Australia suggests that the brain waves that your brain puts out when you're doing a really complicated task and trying to do it fast are a little bit different from the brain waves that people put out if they haven't used, and that's for folks who've used every day for 2 years or more. But we're talking about some pretty subtle stuff here. The fact that I actually have to, you know, put electrodes on your head in order to find these results tells you that we're really, really searching for years and years to find these effects, and they're either small or non-existent.
All right. One more question here. I think we'll have to wrap it up for now. But remember, folks, every Wednesday we visit with Dr. Mitch Earlywine for Cannabis Science. So you can get your questions in next week or email them to 420research@gmail.com. This is a question from WN just about the use of marijuana medicinally for the swelling of joints if you have rheumatoid arthritis.
The data on arthritis of various types go all the way back to ancient China. We're talking 2800 BC, where there are a lot of individual differences in response, but people do really benefit, not just from decreased in swelling, but also less pain total. And we've seen that so consistently now, I think it's fair to say that this is a documented good effect. There's a lot of individual variation in strains, which makes me think we're still trying to get a feel for what is the exact mechanism, but I think that's one where cannabis really does do an excellent job, particularly in comparison to some of the over-the-counter meds that we have available that may, in the long term, actually harm joints or cartilage or things like that. So cannabis may actually be the among the safest of the drugs for that problem.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Earlywine, for joining us again. You always give us so much to think about, and you're very, very popular with the people in the chat room. Thanks again for being here.
It's delightful every time. See you soon.
All right. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. Stick around.
Don't touch that dial. We'll be right back after a word from these 420 friendly sponsors. Wait a minute. This is internet radio. There are no dials here.